Hi, Royals fans. This is J.J. Piccolo. The University of Kansas Health System is the official health care provider of the Kansas City Royals. Get the major league care you deserve at kansashealthsystem.com/royals.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Jake Gutierrez, now joined by Mike McFarland. What's up, Mac? How are you?
Nothing. Jake and I were just having a conversation on the value of face masks and, you know, feeling like a bandit when you go to the grocery store and, you know, wearing the cloth one or the 50-cent one from Taiwan that, you know, the strap breaks in 2 seconds. Then the baseball, softball facilities opened up, and so I wore a cute little Charlie Hustle one, and about 5 minutes into that thing, it was sopping wet from me talking so damn much. Guess I'm full of hot air, but I'm like, it was miserable. I don't like not being able to breathe.
Oh, no. That's key for my enjoyment, to be able to breathe. That's always been something that I've relied on.
But it's good to be back open and doing lessons, though. I mean,
it's absolutely
right?
The kids were ecstatic. I think the parents were even happier just to get them outside doing something physical activity wise instead of killing Nazis and aliens on their video games. So I know that they were happy to get out and start moving around a little bit.
So, Mac, here's something interesting that people can watch today. I know we've all enjoyed watching these great games that have been on from the Royals' postseason runs in 2014 and 2015. We've even seen some 1985 action when they celebrated George Brett's birthday. That's been fun. I've never really gone back and watched too much of the 1980 World Series. I was getting ready to turn 8 years old, and I remember watching those games at my grandparents' house with my grandfather, Danny Ontiveros, and everyone and all the family. And I remember how happy everybody was, how excited everyone was after finally getting over the Yankees hump and then getting to the World Series, but then losing to the Phillies in Game 6. I've never really gone back to watch any of those games, but today on MLB Network at 10:30 a.m., they're going to have Game 1, and then at 1 o'clock Game 2, we're trailing in the 8th inning. The Phillies tag Royals fireman Dan Quisenberry for 4 in the 8th and route to Game 2 win. Then at 3 o'clock, Mike Schmidt homers early in Game 5, and the Phillies stage another late rally against Dan Quisenberry in the 80 World Series. And then later on, they're gonna have Game 6 at 6 o'clock. I remember that was a very traumatic experience for anyone that watched that World Series back in 1980. But I'm looking forward to going back and watching a little bit of that series. And even though Dan Quisenberry did not have a good World Series, I always loved watching Quiz pitch, but to watch 390 George Brett in action. 1980 World Series, where were you? Where was a young Mike McFarland during the 1980 World Series, Mac?
Still in high school. Black and white TV probably in the room sneaking it. They used to have it sneaking your radio into school to listen to the games because they actually had day games back then in the playoffs. You know, just listening to the broadcast on TV, I think it was like Joe Garagiola and even Howard Cosell was doing some of those games. It's been a lot of fun, you know, other than the you know, it doesn't fill up your high-def TV. You know, you got the little box on there, but there were some pretty filthy pitchers, and the biggest thing that I remember once I started playing professionally was, you know, the size of the bats that those guys would swing. They'd swing 35-inch, 33, 34-ounce bats. They were just like clubs back then. And there was some pretty damn good athletes and pretty good players and some guys that could hit the ball a long way back then as well.
The first guy...
lineup, it's unbelievable. Nate, go ahead. I'm just I'm looking at the lineup that, you know, the Phillies had. And yeah, I mean, obviously you knew they were good. They're in the World Series. But Lonnie Smith, Pete Rose, Bake McBride, Mike Schmidt, Keith Moreland, Gary Maddox, Manny Trio, Larry Boa, Bob Boone hitting ninth for the Phillies. But I mean, just listen to some of those names right there and what they would go on to do. But I mean, you don't have to get too far past, you know. Hey, yeah, Pete Rose, Mike Schmidt, back to back. There you go.
Yeah,
and then Bob Boone hitting last. But then the Royals, I'm looking at their game one lineup. Willie Wilson, Hal McRae, George Brett. Yeah, that's a pretty good 1-2-3 punch there at the top of the lineup, I'm thinking. Willie Akins, Daryl Porter, Amos Otis, Clint Hurdle, Frank White, UL Washington. That was the game one lineup, Mike McFarland.
There's some
talent out there on the field.
Frank White hitting in the eight holes, pretty damn good lineup, too. But, you know, you just remember the absolute blazing speed of Willie on the turf. You know, I know he didn't have a good series against the Phillies, but his speed, Hal McRae, just, you know, pure hitter. AO still doesn't get enough credit around here for how good he was. You just start, you know, best part about that, getting to, know him a little bit at fantasy camp and stuff, and you just start talking to Leo and George about some of the things that he did as a player. Like, damn, I never knew that. And it was one of those big market towns versus small market towns, but everyone knew the Royals were a damn good ball club.
Hey, Mac, you were talking about the size of the bats and guys swinging big, heavy bats back in those days. My dad used to always tell me that it was Tony Gwynn that changed that, that he swung a really small bat, and that started to kind of change the way guys looked at what was more important, you know, having a light bat with good speed or a big bat that created power. Do you remember how did you decide what size bat to use, and what do you remember about the evolution of what guys were kind of looking for in a bat?
Well, evolution, let's put it this way. I'm old enough to have used a wood bat in Little League. But then you moved up to the aluminum bats, and you started, they started out as drop fours, like a 33, 29-ounce bat, and pretty much went to a minus three, and ever since then, that's kind of been the standard, you know, a 33-inch, 30-ounce bat that you work from, and, you know, then you get into pro ball, and you can take an ounce out of the cap and get it cupped, different grains of wood, blah, 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 but for the most part, nowadays, everything's based off the aluminum bats and the balance and how it feels. You know, that there's different bats that are end-loaded, there's different bats that are balanced. They have it down to a science. Pretty much back in those days, they would just chop a tree down, lathe it, and however heavy it was, you swung it. So a little bit more advanced technology on how the bats are designed and made nowadays. But those guys were just strong. I mean, just strong as anything, and were able to get that around. And it's not like they didn't have hard throwers, you know, J.R. Richards, Nolan Ryan. Those guys, they threw fuzz back then as well. So they would just get it started early and hope they swing hard and hit it on the barrel and see where it goes. But Tony Gwynn was the one. I think he was using like a 32-inch bat, drop three. He was just such a handy hitter, as most left-handed hitters are. Pete Rose was the same way, but you know, never took a big swing, but they were still able to barrel the ball up on a consistent basis. And, you know, Tony Gwynn, unbelievable hitter that pretty much set the standard moving forward for the pure hitters that are out there nowadays.
I'm you guys may have lost me to the box scores of the 1980 World Series. There goes my Friday, Mac. It's over for me. By the way, Willie Akins hit 400 with four homers in 20 at-bats. George Brett hit 375. Amos Otis, 478 for the World Series. Larry Gura had two starts at a 2.19 ERA. I look back, and even like Hal McRae just – hit the cover off the ball is what, 375 with a 500 slug. You look back, and I remember my grandfather always talking about this, and I kind of remember watching the games. I certainly remember the last game when the Phillies won, and I loved Quiz. And it's tough to look back and see this man, but he had a bad World Series.
Yeah,
he lost a couple of games. He pitched in all six of them at a 5.23 ERA, but lost a couple of games. And I just referenced a couple of the comebacks that the Phillies had against him. If he would have pitched like normal, he wouldn't have had a bad series. The Royals would have won in 1980.
Yeah, again, you're talking about two very fast surfaces with a ground ball pitcher, and yeah, he gave up a few bolts. I know that, but there were also a lot of ground balls that found holes. You know, with the very good defense that the Royals had, they were just especially in Philly out at, I think it was Veterans Stadium, where it was like a skating rink. The ball was so fast on that turf, and just a ground ball pitcher that balls found some holes, and then they'd plug a gap and score a few off him. But he came back and got his. Quiz did all right.
Yes, he did. But I am going to sit back and watch that. And I know that Jake had mentioned when you were just a small boy, you were a Mike Schmidt fan.
Yeah.
Mike Schmidt fan. So you could watch Mike Schmidt and George Brett battling from their third base positions all day long.
Love Schmidt.
MLB Network. So they have four games from the 1980 World Series feature today. So check that out. Of course, the season that George Brett hit 390. Hey, Mac, something else I wanted to talk to you about this week. We had this discussion with Buster Olney and also J.J. Piccolo, and you're well aware that the draft is coming up June 10th and June 11th, and it's going to be five rounds. But then afterwards, it's going to be a free-for-all, and players can sign with whatever team they want for a maximum of $20,000. Some people think this could lead more players going the JUCO route or going back to school. Some people said that big markets are going to clean up, but, you know, it's just $20,000 capped on each player. I was asking JJ if he thought it might help with some of the local talent that you know, the Royals are going to have an opportunity to grab some of those guys that might be interested. And also, talking about teams that have made the World Series, for a kid that's graduating from high school or is in college, when they were in, you know, 7th, 8th, 9th grade or whatever else, you know, the end of middle school or into high school, they were watching the Royals go to the World Series in back-to-back years. So as opposed to maybe 10 years ago or so, you've got a whole bunch of high school and college-age kids that fell in love with the Royals and became huge Royals fans because they were the best team in baseball for at least a year, or, you know, the best team in the American League for a couple of years. So maybe that can help with some of the local talent. I don't know. I'm just curious to see how this happens. What do you think this is going to be like right after the draft when teams are able to go out and sign whoever they want for $20,000 and just basically like high school recruiting for colleges?
Well, exactly. You're exactly right on the JUCOs. I think if you're a high school kid and are not drafted in top five, you'd be stupid not to go to JUCO or, you know, sign that offer that you got from a major university. I think you're just crazy. You're going to leave a lot of zeros behind. You're going to have all kinds of seniors that are going to get drafted and signed this year or signed for that 20 grand. Juniors are going to possibly roll the dice and come back and for their senior year at college. Then you got to throw in the fact that seniors also have a year of eligibility added onto it. So it's going to be wild and woolly. You're right. But it's going to really boil down to identifying those prospects with the Royals' good scouting organization that they have, of finding some diamonds in the rough that they know they can sign for that 20 grand and get them going. Second phase of this is you got to understand that probably the minor league season will be canceled. And it may have a profound effect on the future of minor league baseball with the loss of some organizations, losing and cities losing their teams, which then floods the market with those guys potentially, some guys that were on the cusp that maybe the organization was going to give another year to see if they could figure it out are now going to be gone because you can sign whoever for $20,000 and take a chance on them. So there's going to be some deep ramifications with this year's draft, and going to be real interesting to see, you know, what percentage of college juniors decide to go back for their senior year, because let's say they're an eighth or ninth round potential pick. Do I sign for $20,000, roll the dice, go out, have a monster senior season, and get another couple of zeros on top of that bonus check that I wouldn't have had, you know, before this? So it's going to be a template, I think, moving forward that MLB might like a little bit, not to say that they're going to go back to 40 rounds of drafts again, but it's going to have a huge impact on some kids that have dreamt of playing professional baseball since they were little kids. And that's what makes me very sad that they're not going to get their shot because of this year's draft situation.
You know, Mac, when it comes to what you just mentioned, too, about the probability that the minor league seasons are going to be canceled, I hate to admit this, but I heard Seren Petro make a really interesting point when he was interviewing Mike Matheny this week. He said he was talking about how, look, for the Royals, like what the maybe the biggest key to them, you know, rebuilding the team back into a winner is the development of all of those college arms that they drafted a couple of years ago. And a lot of those guys were expected to be in AAA or at least AA this year, with a chance to maybe make the big league roster by the second half of the season. They're missing out on development right now in the minor leagues. And then if we have this season, it poses this question of, do you just go ahead and put those guys on the major league roster if we end up having this 82-game season so that they get to pitch this year and develop, even if they're not quite ready? I mean, what do you think the right way to handle that situation would be with these young pitchers that are so important to the future of the team?
Well, I don't know the size of the, quote, taxi squad that each organization is going to be allowed to have, but I absolutely put those kids on that. And I, from what I gather, they're going to head to a spring training site with that taxi squad and work them out. I don't think you're going to travel with 50-some-odd players to a town and have them sitting on the bench there and with service time and everything else. I don't know all the details of that, but absolutely those young arms are the first people I put on there. And even to a certain extent, you know, Bobby Witt Jr., throwing those type of guys on there. Obviously the AAA arms, you know, the guys that were borderline potential players to make opening day roster, they're going to be on there as well, because you do need some veterans and guys that have some time in the major league to come up and help, because arms are going to be at a premium. It's going to be real interesting. It's going to be just, you know, kind of like who's going to be on the Chiefs practice squad, those guys that could come in and fill in a job, fill in for a time, give someone a break, put them on the 10-day injured list, whatever, and give them some more time. But the development absolutely has to stay on track for those young arms that we have. They'd be foolish not to put them on that taxi squad, or at least give them something to replicate game situations in whatever form they can get.
Mac, as always, thanks for the time, my man. Have a good weekend with your family.
Sounds good, guys. Take care.
That is Mike McFarland. Let's take a break. Back after this on WHP.